conducting is my first love. When I was considering what I wanted to do, you know, what are you going to do when you grow up, son? And I said, well, Mom, I've been thinking about it a lot. And this was probably my junior, maybe my senior year of high school. And I was telling her how much I love theater and acting and how much I love singing and how much I love performing. And I said, you know, being a conductor is kind of like all of that at the same time. And maybe that's what I'll try. I'm fond of telling my singers that without them, I can't do what I'm best at. In other words, if I were a sculptor, I could have a hunk of marble, and it wouldn't really matter if anybody else were around. I could chip away at that marble, but I'm a sculptor of sound. And unless I have willing participants, people who are willing to give their evenings, their, you know, make time every day to think about their music and to listen to it and to read rehearsal notes or read my program notes or things like that. And if I didn't have a group of willing people, then I can't do what I do best.
When you joined the Kalamazoo Singers as director, were you conscious of the history of the ensemble, which goes back, you know, a lifetime?
Yeah, you know, Mel Ivey founded it in the 70s, and Tom Kasdorf took it over, assumed the leadership role about 5 or so years in. And it has been a Kalamazoo institution for, like you say, really a lifetime, a generation. And I did know that going in. I had looked at some past year's seasons. I had looked at some reviews. I had, of course, looked at the website and found out as much as I could about them. It is a neat organization in that it sees itself as filling a very broad spectrum of the choral art. You know, we sing everything from Renaissance motets to show tunes from the last 2 or 3 years. We will sing in many different languages. We sing opera, we sing music theater, we sing jazz. This coming concert, we're singing Vivaldi and Schubert. You know, you can't get much more classical, if I can use that word for this music. It's not much more classical than Vivaldi and Schubert with a chamber orchestra. So that's something that really attracted me to the Kalamazoo Singers. And since I've been with them, the people are absolutely precious too. And it's great making friends with some wonderful musicians, some wonderful singers. But even that, I would say, isn't as wonderful as, you know, you take a group of singers, all of whom are dedicated and committed, but who are not equal voice. You know, there are some relatively new to the singing experience people, and there are people that have been singing for 40 years or twice that long. There are people who have amazing solo voices, and there are people who just have sort of average, everyday, ordinary voices, but who make such a contribution to the choir. And I think I love that as well, is that our choral sound can be so great even while we have, you know, spectacular solo voices and just kind of everyday voices.
Now, if we could turn to the music that's coming up on this weekend's concert, I believe we have the Gloria by Vivaldi.
Yes, it's his famous Gloria. He actually wrote 3. One is lost, and 2 are extant, which means they still survive. This is the one that is far and away most popular.
What do we know about how it was first performed or what it was meant for in Vivaldi's day?
Vivaldi, his first kind of big job was as the teacher of violin at an orphanage, a girls' orphanage in Venice. What's interesting is that much of this music was written for his girls, and they did everything. They played the instrumental parts. They sang the chorus parts, including the men's parts. I don't know how, but they did. So everything was done by the girls.
Was this a prestigious position for Vivaldi, or was he, you think of an orphanage and don't think of it as a highly acclaimed kind of job?
It's not like being the maestro di cappella at St. Mark's down the street in Venice. You know, that was one of the coveted positions in all of music, to be basically in charge of the music at the Cathedral of St. Mark's there in Venice. So no, this was not a plum position. Then again, Bach never really had a plum position, and yet these two geniuses contributed so much to our art form, to music in general, and to just art in the broadest sense, while laboring in general obscurity.
So what are some of the features of the Gloria that make it so attractive and exciting to hear?
The opening of the Gloria has this amazing rhythmic figure that is just unmistakable. They have this thriving pulse that just motors through the entire movement, and that really sets the tone for it. It's got incredible rhythmic vitality and energy. But you contrast that with the second movement, Etintera Pax, and it's talking about "and on earth peace to men of goodwill," right? It's unrelenting. The harmonic interweaving, the long spun out lines, the overlapping of entrances, there's never any sense of literally peace until you get to the very end. You arrive at the peace that you were promised at the very beginning.
The Vivaldi really is one of the most popular choral pieces, even today. But I'm not that familiar with the Schubert Mass. He did write a lot of vocal music.
Schubert wrote 600 Lieder. He wrote 600 songs in German for solo voice. It's one of the primary sources of repertoire for singers in the world. Literally you could spend your career singing nothing but Schubert, and you probably wouldn't get tired of it. And he wrote, I think he wrote six masses. This is definitely a very small scale mass. It only takes about 25-30 minutes to perform. It's performed with a chamber orchestra.
Well, what's the character of the Schubert Mass?
I would say that overall the Schubert is graceful. It begins with a very, very elegant, flowing, graceful Kyrie, and that feeling really, really permeates the work. Even in the Gloria, there's a sense of grace and gentle control. The Credo is a bit austere, a bit staid, a bit dry. And yet it has its very passionate moments. Sanctus, which is the holy, 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 sanctus, sanctus, sanctus. And it goes into the Hosanna. We think that Hosanna just means yay. It's probably the best translation. You know, we would say yahoo or yippee or whatever. But both are very sort of majestic. And then it concludes with this amazing trio, the Benedictus, which is a pure canon. The soprano enters, and then so she sings her line all the way through. Then the tenor picks up, echoing her note for note in exactly the same key. And the soprano goes on with what you might call a counter melody, or just the continuing melody, really. And then when the tenor finishes, he assumes the soprano role. The soprano takes up a new melody, and the bass comes in, or in this case, we're having it sung by two tenors, with the exact same melody. And then it just sort of graciously, gracefully rounds off with the orchestra closing out. So it is, like I said, it's a pure canon. There is no repetition. Once it starts, it goes. And then the next layer comes in and follows along at exactly the same pace and the same intervals. And there's just three parts and very, very elegant, very gracious. And then he closes with a very simple Agnus Dei.
So was it the Vivaldi that came first in your conception of the program, or the Schubert?
I would have to say I've looked at pairing these two on the same performance for a long time, 10, 15, 20 years. And this is just the first opportunity I've had to do it.
A little bit of a dream come true then.
Yeah, very much so. Sort of like conducting this choir is a little bit of a dream come true.